Hello and welcome to Too Fast, Too Forever. As Welcome as a Family, we chose this one. This is episode 344, Predator, from my birth year, 1987. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe, too. And this episode is brought to you by Lev Tahor. Also known as Pure Heart, is a Jewish sect founded by Shlomo Helbrins in 1988. Shout out to Lev Tahor.
I'm not sure how I feel about this last sponsors yet. I'm a little worried about putting these words because, like, I associate these with our episodes when we post them. So I'm not sure that I should keep doing that. But, you know,
consider we take the money wherever we get it, my friend.
We take the money. I might just not promote that we're taking the money. I might change tomorrow's episode. Anyway, welcome to the show. This is our first pit stop in the 80s cult movie lap. The first pick by Michael and Josh. We are talking about Predator, and with us tonight, we have the man with the biggest biceps we know coming to us from the American South. Honestly, so this movie was described when it was first pitched as Alien in the Jungle, but there, I think there's also a lot of similarities to another movie, a movie we have recently talked about with this gentleman, with the movie Jaws. I think there's a lot to be said, a lot of similarities there. With us tonight, once again, Mark Hoffmeyer. Hello, Mark.
Do you ever think about the Yautja scouting system?
What's that?
Because, well, so that Predators movie, when I was doing research for this, I put Predator, the Blu-ray on. And in Predators, they caught a serial killer. They, like, went around the globe, and they brought people from Earth to a hunting planet. And in this one, they just dump a Yautja off in the jungles to battle, I don't know, military, like, you know, gorillas and all of that. In the second one, he's going after gang members, but, like, there's a scouting system. Like, it's like baseball. Like, you go around the country, you look for pitchers. But there's Yautja scouts that are like, hey, Topher Grace, serial killer, send him to the planet. Like, these guys are, like, good, like, they're, like, detective level good. We should hire them just to, I don't know, find serial killers.
They're an alien, like, okay, yeah. So they're watching on TV and then sending into hot spots of scumbags.
I got it. True Detective Yautja.
Oh, I like that.
Just season 5 of True Detective. Let Issa Lopez crush it. Just called it. True Detective Yautja.
I am glad you brought up the sequels because I realized we've done so many episodes of this podcast and we have not realized before today there is another franchise with a naming convention as fucked up as the Fast and Furious. Joe, do you know the names of these sequels?
No, please inform me. I heard Predators, so I... Okay.
So this comes out in 1987, Predator.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Predator 2 makes total sense. Comes out in 1990, set in Los Angeles.
Makes sense, yeah.
Predators...
Is three.
Comes out in 2010. Sequel set on another planet.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Movie number 4, The Predator...
We're doing good. But this is Fast and Furious naming convention. They stole this.
It comes out in 2018. And not only that, set between movies 3 and 4. Or between 2 and 3. So it's just like...
Beautiful.
Then, fourth movie. Or fifth movie.
Fifth movie.
Prey. Prequel to all of them.
That makes sense. That's good.
And then just announced like 2 weeks ago, sequel to Prey, maybe Badlands, which is a cool title, but also don't name it after an existing Badlands movie, but whatever. All we know is that it's, quote, set chronologically in the future. So we go from Predator to Predator 2 to Predators to The Predator to Prey to Badlands. And then, of course, Alien vs. Predator and Aliens vs. Predator Requiem.
Yes.
Sorry that I was trying to interrupt, but I was just thinking about Martin Sheen and Sissy Spacek battling a Yautja.
Are they the detectives in True Detective season 5?
No, they're from the movie you just mentioned, Badlands. Terrence Malick directed it.
Oh, that, like, Badlands.
One of my amazing movies. Just Marty Sheen running around the jungle.
Well, hear me out. What if it's also True Detective season 5? Bring them back together.
And it's made up of the cast of Into the Badlands, I love.
And the soundtrack is just
the video game
Bruce Springsteen song Badlands.
Oh, okay. I thought we were going to say the video game Badlands, like we just steal all the music from
also
there.
Also
Yeah. You know, if I had to watch that, I would have to watch it inside of like a hermetically sealed thing because I would explode. And I just don't want, I don't want Mark guts all over my home.
Would they be green? Would they be green?
No, it would just be body. But I'm like Mothra. I'll just lay an egg and come back.
Okay.
I'm doing a Godzilla assignment. That's where that came from.
So I realized in watching this movie, it's hard to take notes in this movie because
very hard.
I'm just watching the movie. Number two, it's like this guy blows up, then this guy blows up, then this guy blows up.
I came prepared, guys.
I have a lot of background. I knew that Mark was going to have stuff, so I wasn't concerned about it. But let me go through a quick overview of like the making of, and then I've got teaser.
I forget that people do that because when on a movie, films and flicks, I just jump into
a movie. You just go in, and I'm just like, should I talk? I don't know if I should.
I never even explain what year the movie came out or what the synopsis is.
Look, no one needs it. I just say it just for the record.
Oh, got it.
I'm also going to tease. We got crazy credits.
Oh.
We also got a lot of trivia that I want you guys to interrupt because there's like 230 things of trivia that are cut down to like 10, but they're like 10 like kind of meaty ones. So we'll get, okay. Predator 1987 streaming on Hulu. A team of commandos on a mission in a Central American jungle find themselves hunted by an extraterrestrial warrior. Directed by John McTiernan a year before he did Die Hard. He would also go on to do Die Hard 3 and The Hunt for Red October. This is his first studio film, only his second film ever. So imagine like this movie going on to become what it becomes. Second movie. First real movie.
That's insane. Basically. Insane. Crazy.
If I was a director, I would be McTiernan. I couldn't direct three Stone Cold classics like him, but I respect Die Hard, Predator, and The Hunt for Red October so much. They're just beautiful, classic, shot very classily. They subvert genres, and I love those McTiernan films. He's so good. Even this movie does it, but we'll talk about that later. I interrupt.
Written by brothers Jim and John Thomas, who also wrote or substantially were involved in screenplays of Predator 2, Executive Decision, which is a movie wherein Steven Seagal is ostensibly the star and then dies 10 minutes into the movie.
Sounds amazing.
They also wrote Wild Wild West, and they also wrote Behind Enemy Lines. So these guys have been busy. Five producers, including Joel Silver, who basically produced everything, Lawrence Gordon, who basically produced everything, shot by the guy Donald McAlpine, who shot Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, and Moulin Rouge, and also close to your heart, Joe, he also shot Mrs. Doubtfire. So the guy who shot this movie would also go to shoot Mrs. Doubtfire. Budget somewhere about $15 million, made about $100 million, 80 on Rotten Tomatoes, only a 47 on Metacritic, which seems bad.
Very low, yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes consensus, part sci-fi, part horror, part action, all muscle, which is pretty good. So we got crazy credits. So Mark, last lap, we discovered crazy credits. We're going to continue them on. We got two crazy credits here, one of which I think is obvious, the number one. All these seven main cast members reappear in ascending order as their names are displayed to give a smile to the audience in appreciation. 69 up, nice. Two down. Then number two, no context, no explanation of why this is in quotation marks. Quote, cool suit for Predator, developed and provided by Diligent Dwarves Effects Lab. End quote. 10 up, 1 down.
Excellent.
Someone saw that, which is like,
excellent.
We need to memorialize that on IMDb.
They got through, and 10 people liked it. I want to know what the fucking scam is with crazy. There's some kind of like pyramid scheme happening with crazy credits that we need to uncover. There's like money laundering or something happening there. Like, why are there so many likes and not many dislikes about the dumbest things ever? I don't understand it.
I don't know. I think because I was gonna have an explanation. I don't think it makes any sense. I don't know. I genuinely don't know why these are so overwhelmingly universally beloved.
By all
if
metrics.
If there's money laundering involved, I'd be in on it. So I'm pretty sure they're not laundering money.
IMDb is free to use, except crazy credits, where all the money and the drugs are.
Yeah.
So some trivia about this movie. The last trivia that I have, which I think is just very funny, goes into the first one, is just, quote, Richard Chavez was bitten by ants. Just an entire bit of trivia, verbatim. I was like, it's good trivia. I love it.
On the movie set?
Yeah. Because the number one trivia, the most overwhelmingly upvoted trivia, is the film provided a variety of hardships for the actors, such as leeches, snakes, stifling humidity, and heat. All the night scenes were filmed during freezing cold temperatures, which was especially hard on Arnold when the pottery clay he wore became cold and wet, and they literally used like a fire hose to like coat him in clay.
Oh, whoa.
He tried drinking Jaeger tea, a schnapps mixture to warm him, but just got drunk from it. So, you know, trying to stay warm and just got fucked up. So
that's kind of sick. He's just drinking Jaeger. I'm assuming Jaeger tea means that he's drinking Jägermeister warm.
And schnapps.
I think Jaeger might be considered a schnapps.
This is J-A-G-E-R-T-E-E, one word. I don't know.
As someone who went to college between 01 and 05, I hate the word Jaeger.
Yeah.
Like Jägermeister, Jaeger bombs.
Oh, yeah. Do you like Jaeger, though? Do you like Anisette? Do you like the flavoring?
No. I never tasted it. I just chugged that in Red Bull, and I would run home from clubs.
Yeah, blacked out, run home.
Yeah, run home. No, sometimes I wasn't even that bad. I'm like, I just got to go.
Yeah.
But I also am sure that kept you employed as a bouncer because of the effects of said Jaeger.
Oh, man, I never drank during bouncing.
No, I'm just saying, like, other people would need to be...
Oh, yes. Jaeger supported you.
And Four Loko was the one thing that really kept
me. Oh,
I was... That was like, that. Watching indie kids drink Four Loko was like, I was like, there's going to be like 8 heart attacks tonight.
Wait, have
like,
I told... I don't think I'm almost certainly haven't told Mark, because I don't know why this would have come up. But Joe, I don't know if I told you, but my senior year of college, our class was one of the 2 or 3 schools that got Four Loko banned. Like, the first week in school, you know, it was like an opening week party or whatever, and like 6 kids got hospitalized because of Four Loko.
Sorry, and
New Jersey was like, we gotta figure something out because this can't. But there were like 3 schools that opening weekend were just like kids went to the hospital because like those were so insane. Bad. But like our school was one of them. So shout out to Ramapo.
Watching indie kids dance to like Bandages by Hot Hot Heat is like, while drinking Four Locos, one of the scariest things you'll ever see in your life. You're like, oh man, that indie kid's gonna blow up. Like, that kid's gonna explode. And like, no one exploded on the dance floor. So that was good.
I've definitely taken years off my own life with Four Locos, and I had invented something in college called the Joe 2 5 Loco Special, which is where we would...
What'd you put in it?
We would drink a quarter of it and then fill that up with vodka, and then just drink a stronger Four Loco, and it was instant blackout juice. None of us remember any of those nights. But
I would have been with you.
Yeah, no, it was amazing. You needed one drink that cost $6 to be just obliterated, and that's what we did.
Wow.
You know, blackout people are super easy to throw out of bars, too. So
I
promote it at any place I work at, because I can just pick you up and throw you out.
And I'm non-confrontational as a drunk, so, like, if you were like, you need to leave, I'd have been like, I think I do, too. So
you're not really confrontational and sober, either, so.
I agree.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, I'll leave. I'll go somewhere else.
Wait, that was too easy. Why are you being out of short circuited? Like, why are you being rational? Yeah. You're on Four Loko.
Yeah. I'd be like, a little hot. I should be outside anyways. It's too hot in here.
Just get out of here. Stop it.
When did you pivot from Five Loko just to vodka lime? Vodka soda lime.
Oh, no, come on. We had, you know me, I've had a decade run with Mr. John Daniels too. But
I know, but like before, it was Jack and Coke in winter and vodka soda lime in the summer.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was cutting all the bullshit out of my life, so now it's just vodka.
So Four Loko was a casualty.
Yeah. Easy. Well, I mean, they don't make them the same anymore. Once they changed the recipe, it was trash anyway.
I'm so sorry. We ruined it.
Yeah, you ruined it.
Between 01 and like 05 and like to 10, some of those dietary supplements and drinks,
They're going to kill us. I mean, we're going to find out like later on that like people are worried about the COVID vaccine. We should be worried about the Four Locos that we drank in college. Like, that's the real shit that's going to kill us.
Mm-hmm. Mark, your heart is 7 times the size of a regular.
It's Secretariat had the big heart, right? I think.
Yeah.
That's why it won all those races.
I like this Four Locos tangent.
Mark was such a good bouncer.
Four Locos tangent on the Predator episode. That's good.
So Jesse Ventura was told by Wardrobe that his biceps were bigger than Arnold's. And so he was like, hey, Arnold, let's have a contest. Let's measure our arms. Whoever's got bigger arms gets a bottle of champagne from the other one.
Arnold's okay.
Like, okay. They measured. Arnold won because he told Wardrobe, tell him he's got bigger biceps than me.
That's a good fact. That's a really fun one. I like that one.
Jean-Claude Van Damme was originally cast as the Predator because he would use like an agile ninja-like hunter, but the way that they built the costume was too cumbersome for him to do, so they instead cast Kevin Peter Hall, who is 7'2", who was also the helicopter pilot at the end of the movie, and they redesigned it to fit his body, even though the suit wound up weighing 200 pounds and needed a bungee rig to walk around. But Van Damme, who I think is like 5'9", like could not have been the Predator. I mean, he would have been a different Predator, but like crazy.
Have you seen that original costume before Stan Winston built it? Mm-mm. Oh, so there's original design that they use in Predators later. And it has a brief cameo, but they completely redid it with Stan Winston. And so Stan Winston's the one who Arnold's like, hey, man, I worked with him before. Let's get him to do it. So they waited for Stan Winston to completely rebuild the suit. And so he went and like what we know now is what Stan Winston did quickly with his team.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. I think it's one of the greatest costumes ever. But like Kevin Peter Hall, his physicality in this movie and his movements, and like when that final fight when he's tossing Arnold around like a beach ball.
Yep.
Like just his like when he reaches out his arms and like it's like, you know, I think people talk about Andy Serkis and his mocap, mm-hmm. but Kevin Peter Hall took the monster and the grace to the next level. Like this was like perfect casting, perfect costume, and it's an elegant, wonderful, like beastly, awesome monster in this movie. Like it's this gorgeous character work.
It's also great to see somebody that seems, because the size difference is nice, like you have somebody that is formidable to Arnold, and like when he like picks him up and puts him against the tree or whatever, and you can see that Arnold's feet are off the ground and he's still standing, that's just like a really imposing scene that like you're like, mm-hmm. oh, Predator's huge, this is something that could fight Arnold Schwarzenegger, and that's crazy to think about.
Joey, before you finish trivia, can I go off on a quick Predator-related tangent?
Please, interrupt me as often as you want.
I spent a lot of time with Predator last year, so I covered it on Movies, Films, and Flicks, and I also wrote about it for The Ringer, and I just dove into the Predator. And what I think took me a long time to realize about this movie is I've always associated it with like testosterone and brawn and bulging biceps and muscles. But what's crazy is that they signed up all these people to be in this. You know, they signed up Sonny Landham, Billy, who had to have his own bodyguard offset. You know, they had Bill Duke. They had Kevin, like, you know, Carl Weathers, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jesse Ventura. Just, we're talking muscles on muscles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But all these guys signed up to be in a movie where they get obliterated by an alien.
Yeah.
Yep.
So as much as we talk about the testosterone in this movie and all the macho posturing, at the end of the day, these dudes were meant to be built up like that. They were meant to destroy that village. They were meant to be lifting up cars. So when the Predator just obliterates them, it makes that creature all the more important. And watching Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, you know, Mr. Olympia, Mr. World, getting chucked around and scared and hiding in mud, not even being able to fight. He had to win by using his brains. He becomes a final girl in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he really does. He's the final girl in this movie. He is outpowered, and the only reason he wins is because he outsmarts the thing with a trap. And it's such a really clever, I guess, it really does subvert some tropes in that, you know, the 80s was associated with brawn and muscle and all of that. But then you have these guys who all signed up. I mean, like, Jesse Ventura doesn't put up a fight. Dylan doesn't put up a fight. Mac doesn't put up a fight. Poncho doesn't put up a fight. Hawkins doesn't put up a fight. Billy, we don't even know what his fight looks like, but he loses. So it's really interesting. And I think it's an aspect of Predator that doesn't get enough love. As much as we talk about major film stars today not losing fights or looking good on screen, these huge dudes with huge egos got killed like nothing. And that's pretty admirable for an 80s R-rated bombastic action film. And I just admire it more now.
You're 100% right. That's exactly what I was thinking, too. It was in watching the scene that I was just describing that I was like, this is so funny that we had spent so much time talking about Fast and the Furious, about punch counts and how much can they get beat up and how much can they lose. And then you see Arnold just getting tossed around by Predator. Like, ultimately, he's going to win. But like you said, there is a possibility that he might lose, considering Predator did just kill all the other guys, right? So, yeah, it is something definitely different than what we're used to now, for sure. And even back then, like you said, it's not of the times either, right? Like, this is an 80s movie where, like, you're right, these are jacked-ass dudes. Like, they should... it's amazing to think that they're like, yep, you're going to get killed pretty early. And they're like, okay.
I mean, it's a slasher movie, but I think what's also cool is that, like, it doesn't start as the Predator movie. It starts as them as just, like, military dudes, like, on this, like, CIA mission that they're, like, not exactly sure what they're doing and, like, maybe not agreeing to. And then all of a sudden they're just hunted by this thing that, like, they, like, the damage they do to the village, like, they are getting done to them. Like, it's, it backs into, it goes from being an action movie into a horror movie. And, like, it's just, it's so good. It's so good.
What outfits would y'all wear? So there's a scene when they step off of the helicopter in the beginning and, you know, Jesse Ventura has the MTV shirt. Then you have what Sonny has. Billy has like the tracksuit. People have suits. Arnold has the red shirt. Like, for me, so I dressed up on it. I would have a hiking. I have this brand Wander that I love. I would have my Wander hat on and I would have a brewery shirt on, like stepping off of that thing in jeans and probably some On Clouds on my feet. Like, that would be me stepping off that helicopter. I'm like, hey, y'all. How's it going, guys? Got some IPAs? Like, that would be me. Like, I would have a hiking hat, distillery shirt, brewery shirt, jeans, and On Clouds, and probably some Bombas.
That's a good look.
I would act like I was prepared, so I would have some boots, definitely like a hat for sure.
What kind of hat?
Like a bucket hat for sure. I would go bucket hat. We're in the jungle. Come on.
Wait, a bucket hat like a Fassbender in The Killer?
Oh, does he? No, I haven't seen it yet.
What's a bucket hat?
Like, just
like
a
Blossom?
Bucket hat's like a Bill Murray and Caddyshack hat.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Cool, like, I'm cool. Going to the fucking jungle.
He's protecting
jungle.
His head from the sun.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Got
protecting
it.
My that's a you maybe even have like the strap that comes up through the chin. And Ooh. then I would absolutely have multiple extra pairs of socks. I hate having wet feet. And you know, t-shirt and jeans, maybe long sleeve underneath in case it got a little cold. You know, regular t-shirt over top, long sleeve underneath.
Yeah, I think you need layers is important. Layers is not, you know, flaunted enough in movies.
Off of this helicopter, they're all dressed to the nines, like they just got picked up and brought there, so they haven't had time to prepare.
This
is what I wear. So, like, they would be like, oh, there's Hoffmeyer. Grab him.
Yeah, mine would be very similar. It would be jeans, black t-shirt, no hat.
Yeah, I'd be either in, like, basketball shorts or sweatpants with a t-shirt and a hoodie. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Ooh.
I mean, I'd be comfortable. I wouldn't be, like, you know.
I would not be ready for the fucking jungle.
I'd be comfortable.
Yeah. You're so dead. That scorpion got your ass, like, right off the plane. We land, you got basketball shorts on, just bites you in the leg. You don't even need Predator.
Dude, I would die to the porcupine.
That boar would kill me.
Oh, yeah.
Boar kills all of us.
Listen, that boar that Matt kills in this movie, that thing is, like, from the movie Razorback. Like, that
it's
thing's
huge.
Its own horror movie.
Yes.
Like, that thing would, whoo-wee. Like, in Florida, we had javelinas. You don't mess with those things. And if you did, you're climbing a tree. So it's that thing would knock the tree down.
Yeah, the feral pigs.
Well, they make fun of him for killing a thing that's too big. They're like, couldn't you kill something? Like, it's just, it's crazy that, like, they're like, you're too much of a man.
Shaving without, you know, just even when they're introduced, just he's shaving without, you know, like whatever shaving lotion, you know, he doesn't have any.
Just raw dog, you know, shaving just, in the jungle. I agree. Is like so manly. You can't get any cooler.
Jokes. Yeah, right. Just they're shaving. They're telling stupid jokes. Like they're the man's man. But then they get destroyed. And you, the one good thing though, Joey, is you would survive this movie in the jungle because, like, you know, during the production they like went to this spot that all the leaves were falling. So they had to build fake trees. They had to cut branches down and just put branches in front of people because the guy wanted to go to his house, which is like a vacation resort. So they went to film there. Then all the leaves were falling, and so then they had to go find another spot to go film. Because one of the producers or the production designers wanted to go shoot somewhere. So they were building trees. They were adding branches in front of takes because there just wasn't, like, everything was falling off the trees when they were shooting.
That's kind of amazing.
This movie had to go through a new suit. It had to get rid of JCVD. It had no jungle. It had to, like, make up a jungle. Then it had to go to the jungle. But then once they're in the jungle, they're like, we're shooting in a jungle. This sucks.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many problems that this movie had, and then it's what it is. Like, what I love about McTiernan is you hear about Die Hard, right? There's issues. When you hear about other movies, when there's issues for some people, instead of when they have downtime, instead of making the movie better, they're like, oh, this sucks. Like, I'm going to go surf. You know, like, McTiernan's sitting there writing, making it better. Like, Die Hard got better because they just sat around waiting for Bruce Willis. Predator got better because they had so many delays. And, like, that's the McTiernan special. Like, he uses that time to make the movie better. And that's why you can never recreate these movies. They just had to, like, hey, what, and Die Hard, have this guy run by some flowers and get stuck. Like, we need something to film. Like, you could never recreate that again. And so I love what McTiernan does.
Well, speaking of writing on set, Joe, I don't know if you know the name. I don't know if you recognized his face, but the one guy who, like, kind of stands out from the rest of the bunch, Shane Black, who plays character name of Rick Hawkins.
Yeah.
He is largely known as a screenwriter. They had him on there. They had him on set because they're like, we want to have a writer. Just in case we need to, like, punch stuff up, like, we want to have a writer on set. But if you don't know him, he wrote Lethal Weapon. He wrote and directed The Nice Guys. He wrote and directed Iron Man 3. Yep. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. While he was making this movie, he wrote The Last Action Hero with Arnold. So just, like, on set, just, like, in between, like, instead of, like, you know, in your trailer eating snacks or watching a TV show, he's just like, I'm going to write a movie. So,
sick. Very cool. That's very, very cool. Yes.
There's so much downtime on film sets. It sounded like they just worked out, wrote, and then painted things green so it looked like the jungle.
Well, so speaking of colors, they wanted the blood to originally be orange, but they're like, shit, that's really hard to do. So instead, they just bought a bunch of glow sticks and cut them out and used them like liquid whenever they needed them. And so it wound up being a combination of glow sticks and KY jelly that became his blood. But just like, we want orange, but like green is cooler, I think.
Yeah, oh, it looks better. And right? The visual effects at the time were so high tech. They said, like, the special effects guy, McTiernan, was like, they were a pain in the butt on set because we had to, like, shoot for hours to match up and sync and do the mirrors and do all this. Like, it was such a new technology back then. So, like, yeah, they were going through new technology, using glow sticks for blood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this, I'm telling you, like, this thing would fall apart under someone else's hand.
Oh, yeah.
Like, but it works. Like, this, you know, 2,000 of these movies would have fallen apart. But, like, somehow this one came out of the jungle, a classic. And, it, you know, it got to the choppa, and it escaped. And I also, too, the narrative simplicity of this movie, right? It's, we land, we blow some people up, let's get to the chopper.
Yep.
It's like, that way you can focus on character, right? There's a lot of people looking at jungles in this movie. There's a lot of people going, what's that? And it's just them looking at trees. So, like, there's a lot of tree looking in this movie. But, like, that's what builds the characters. You know, like, I love the relationship between what Mac and Blaine. And when Blaine dies, Mac loses his mind. And, like, this is like Fast and Furious. You actually know the characters' names.
Yeah.
I feel like a good movie is like, man, you got Dylan running around. You got Dutch. There's Mac. There's Sonny. Like, or, I'm sorry. There's Billy. Like, you know all their names. And I feel like that's when it's a good action movie.
Yeah.
I'm talking a lot, guys. I'm sorry.
No, we love it, brother. Please.
I real quick, so where do you guys think, I have a huge data post coming up, so I'm not going to give a lot away.
Okay.
But I pulled the data on over, like, well over 1,000 R-rated action films.
Jesus.
And I pulled, like, IMDb scores, I pulled the Letterboxd, Metacritic, Tomato Meter scores, did a whole ranking. Where do you think Predator ranks on the R-rated scale of, like, movie? Like, where do you think, according to critic scores and user scores, it ranks amongst R-rated action films?
Well, I was saying that, like, I was surprised that Metacritic was so low.
Like 40 or whatever. 47 you just said, yeah, we're kind of... But I would say this has to be near the top 10, right? I would say probably around 10. Like, not cracking the top 10, but around 10.
What's crazy to me is I was looking at, you know, on Letterboxd, they have a list of every year ranked. And, like, I love this movie, and this is still, like, my fourth favorite movie from 1987. Like, above this, we have RoboCop, which is also
blood. Oh, that's insane. There you go. Yeah.
Then also, you know, above that, not bloody or R-rated, but Raising Arizona, or that's R-rated, but Raising Arizona and Moonstruck, but, like, those are different movies. But, like, in this 1 year, I don't even know if Predator would be number one, and that's just 1 year in one, you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Where are we at?
R-rated action films, it's 152.
Insane.
Based on average combination of not all average
rankings of Letterboxd, Metacritic, IMDb, and Tomato Meter. Y'all want to hear the top 10?
Please.
I won't give away more. No, I'm going to read the top 10 to you.
Can we guess them or no?
Oh, yeah. So, okay, yeah. If you guess the top 10, let's see what you can do.
Is RoboCop up there?
No.
Is Terminator 2 up there?
Yes.
Where is it at? Give me the number.
A 7.
Okay.
So these are R-rated action movies.
Yeah. It's
Are they specifically bloody or just R-rated action?
Well, just can I read them? Like, so
yes, read them, please.
Released in 68. So I like the guessing. Take a couple more shots at it.
You said 1968?
Yeah, since when the R rating happened in 1968.
Aliens?
Yes. Aliens is number two.
Okay.
Alien?
Alien
doesn't count.
Is, no.
So James Cameron's got two in there already.
He has three in there.
True Lies?
It comes before Terminator 2.
Terminator 1?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's a hint. It comes before Terminator 2.
The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
I was going to guess. When you said 1968, I was going to guess that. Okay. Like,
far and ahead, the best.
Sure.
And then Aliens, Ran, Saving Private Ryan, Mad Max Fury Road, Unforgiven, Terminator 2, The Terminator, Departed, No Country for Old Men, and then Die Hard. I'm just going to go Fistful of Dollars and for a few dollars more. That's the top 13.
I read a thing today that Steven Spielberg said he watched The Zone of Interest and it was the best World War II movie since its own. I'm like, I guess if you made Saving Private Ryan and Schindler's List, like, you can say that, but it feels like so cocky to be like, it's the best movie somebody's made since I made one of them. It's just like, all right, guy, like, what? Like, I get it. You're probably right, but, like, don't say it like that.
I wonder if Sergio watched The Unforgiven and went, that's the best Western since The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Maybe.
Like, but I think that's a good top 10. And listen, it's very much so score driven. And so in this article, I'm also using subjectiveness, cult classic type stuff. Because I've watched them all. So I'm just starting with like a good baseline.
And that's a great way to get a baseline. I love it. Yeah.
And you know what's annoying? This all came from, I was talking about Con Air with somebody and they're like, you know, I just like action movies like Predator and Die Hard. I'm like, well, that's a pretty high bar. Like that's.
You know, I like movies that are just like widely considered to be the best that's ever been made.
I'm like, I think 99.9% of movies aren't as good as those two.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to be let down a lot. So I got something very fun coming and it's cool. But, you know, I was really pretty shocked about Predator because like I think if we're just doing like legacy, it's got to be a tier one.
It has the whole franchise after it.
Yeah. Like I everyone loves it. Like, you know, every dad.
Yes.
You know, every dude my age, right, has watched Predator. Like, just Predator. Like, just Predator's on.
I wonder if that's been at all dinged in recent years. Because this movie is very, like, homophobic. Like, there's stuff that, like, today be like, I can't watch this movie. Like, other movies, like, there's not the issues. But, like, Jesse Ventura saying hard F, it's just like, all right, guy. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, it makes sense.
You drop two lines in this movie, right? Like, you drop two lines in it. Probably has a higher score, you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The vagina jokes, I think they'd probably not fly as well today. And yes, definitely Jesse Ventura because
it's
homophobic.
It's one of them. And it's like, no, like, get rid of that. It's like in The Shining when that bathroom scene, when that one word's dropped, you're like, no, like, guys, like, stop. Like, you don't need it.
Yeah.
You're not Tarantino.
So when we did, in COVID, we did the best 80s action movies. We did like a March Madness-style bracket, and we separated them into eight groups of eight, and this fell into creature features. This was the number two seed. Number one was Aliens, which makes sense to me. Yeah. Aliens 1, Predator 2, The Thing 3, Lost Boys 4, which, okay.
Mm.
Big Trouble, Near Dark, Monster Squad, Toxic Avenger.
Well, the best action hero in all those is Jack Burton.
I thought you were going to say Toxie. Toxie's pretty good, too.
Pride, he's New Jersey, my all-time baby. Favorite action hero is Jack Burton. He's an idiot. And Kurt Russell plays him perfectly. It makes me so happy. Sorry. That's a total tangent.
Hold on. I will say... Oh, no, different movie. I was going to say, somebody just picked... I thought they picked Big Trouble in Little China, but they picked another movie from the 80s that you love. One of our patrons, won't spoil who it was, just picked They Live for us to talk about later in the lab. So...
I show that to my students all the time, every time a chance I get. Hey guys, watch this. Like, Mark, we're leaving class. Just watch it. Now. Watch this fight. It'll change your life.
So the predator creature, scaly flesh based on koi and locusts, which is kind of a weird, gross mashup. Mandibles came from James Cameron. Quote, you know, I've always wanted to see something with mandibles. So they're like, all right.
Okay.
They just did that. And the clicks and gurgles were created by Peter Cullen, who did the voice. He originally had no idea what to do. After he saw the design, he said it looked like a dying horseshoe crab. And so he remembered. So, Joe, remember when we were doing Icons on Earth? And we're like, that guy went back to Buffalo and was like, I remember the snowplow has that sound.
Sound, and that's the sound. Yes.
So this guy's like, it looks like a dying horseshoe crab. And I remember that when you flip a horseshoe crab over, it gurgles. It's just like, what? In what kind of brain?
Sound brain, yeah.
And then they said that the clicking, he did just because he had already, he spent 11 reels. He did 11 reels of King Kong and like his voice was spent. And so he's just like, clicking is easy. I can do clicking. So he just like clicked.
That's kind of sick too.
Pretty funny. Yeah. Two other things. Number one, for the Oscars, this goes back to Kevin Peter Hall, the guy who played the Predator. There was confusion about makeup effects versus visual effects because it was kind of both. So it was nominated for visual effects, but lost to Inner Space. Rick Baker, who is one of the all-time great monster makers, won makeup for Harry and the Hendersons, which used basically the same things they did in this movie. And also in Harry and the Hendersons, Kevin Peter Hall was in the costume. So like he was in two movies that same year.
In two costumes, both nominated.
Right. And like, you know, Harry and the Hendersons, good. But like, Predator, right? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Come on, y'all. get it right, guys.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And the only other thing on the Predator I want to say is Carl Weathers, rest in peace, just died, was cast because John McTiernan wanted a, quote, real actor to act against Arnold. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things in this movie that, like, stand the test of time and, like, you know, are people's favorite thing or whatever. But, like, that you son of a bitch. Like, the arm,
the biceps. Meme. The meme forever. I use that meme all the time. It's, like, one of my favorite memes.
Got you pushing too many pencils. Like, it's so over the, like, it's so normal, but also at the same time so over the top. It's wonderful. It's the best.
The only
arm wrestles like that anyway. I'm just letting you know.
In midair? No. Yeah. No. But the only other scene that comes close to that for me that's much less known is Exit Wounds. When they, like, lock arms in Exit Wounds, and he's like, the bad guys are out there. That's, like, as close as you get to that arm thing. And I'm sure it's just an homage to Predator anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Just, and then he starts winning Arnold, and he's like, oh, I'm winning an air arm wrestling competition. Arm wrestling is crazy, y'all. Have I told you the story?
No, right, please.
Are you about to go over the top with us?
In college, I used to weigh 250 pounds, and I could bench 350, and I was just a big dude. And one night at a party, it always starts at one night at a party, someone's like, hey, the two big guys at the party, you guys should arm wrestle. I'm like, I don't want to arm wrestle. And then like, everyone's like, arm wrestle, arm wrestle, arm wrestle. I'm like, I don't want to arm wrestle. And then the guy's like, all right, man, let's just arm wrestle. So I'm like, all right, we're arm wrestling. I snapped his arm. Like, I snapped Jesus. It.
I was hoping that's not where that story went, but I've seen that.
And then I had to drive him to I drove him to the ER. I stayed with him all night. And, like, we still keep in touch.
That's the best end to that story, though. It's beautiful.
I mean, you snap someone's arm, you drive him to the hospital.
Yeah, that's, like, the manly, responsible thing to do. That's pretty awesome.
I remember I was winning, and I remember him kind of, like, doing one last gasp. I'm like, I don't know. And all of a sudden, poof, like this huge explosion happened. He's like, did you hit me? I'm like, I didn't hit you. And then his arm just went,
oh.
So, yeah,
like people outside heard the snap.
Ow.
But yeah, I was an interesting fella in college.
It sounds fun though. You live some life, man. That's how you got to do it.
Every time Mark is on a podcast, I hear new story. Like we just did an episode for his show that'll be out in a while, and like he told like three stories. I'm just like, how do you have more stories? I don't understand.
I mean, I'm 41. I've lived.
Yeah, Florida bouncer. Come on, man. It writes itself.
Like I know that, like, you know, in all of our episodes together and the time that we hung out in person, like we've only like spent maybe like 15 hours talking, and like I know, admittedly, 14 and a half of those hours are you talking. I know that there's so many stories that I don't know, but it just feels like you have so many crazy stories. It blows me away. I love it.
I love it. Blows me away. I love it.
It's life, guys. I don't know. I just like figuring, you know, I don't know, adventure.
If you're chatty and like a generally decent person, I fall into all kinds of weird shit. Like, it's just like how it happens, you know? You're just like, oh, yeah, did you ever meet my friend? And you're like, now I'm arm wrestling some dude and driving him to the hospital. And you're like,
and just a happens. Tuesday for Mark.
Yeah.
But now I was afraid whenever after that. Like, I don't think I'll ever arm wrestle again.
You should be retired. That's like Jersey in the Rafters situation. If you break someone, you've won. You've won arm wrestling. You're done.
That's a it's big like the win. Punching. It's like the punching bag thing machine. If you just break it.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I'm never hitting this thing again. I'm done.
All nines. Over. It's over. You won. Just call it a day.
Can I tell you my one major thing against Yautja?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. They're intergalactic hunters who get Ubered off on our planet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They can jump through trees.
Yep.
They can turn invisible.
Yep.
They have heat vision. They have a rocket laser guided cannon.
Yeah.
They're extremely powerful. They are just, they can self-heal.
Pretty much, yeah.
I guess hunters do just sit in a box and shoot deer. But this thing, hey man, like, what'd you get up to this weekend, Chuck? Well, I went down to Earth and blew up some commandos. Did they see you? No, I was invisible. And you're like, I did fight one guy. And you're like, yeah, but you're 8 foot. You're like 700 pounds. So, like, Joe, you're 900 pounds. You're 8 feet.
Yeah.
And you're trained.
Like, yeah. You're not just, you're a looking big real dude. Good.
Like you're just like ripped. Everyone looks at you and they're like, phew. It's like, just Jesus. Like, you're like
a specimen.
You're like Dwayne Johnson, but 9 foot.
Yes.
Right? You fight someone who has never fought like before, and you're like, all right, you know what? I'll take off my laser cannon and I'll take all this stuff off and you and I will square off. You'll pummel the dude. Like,
either, yeah, fair. Even still, it's not a fair fight. Yeah. I agree.
That's my one problem with the Predator.
Well, so I think I've only seen Prey once. I loved Prey. But I think they kind of addressed that. Like, in Prey, the Predator is like a baby Predator who's like learning how to fight. And I think in that movie, it also like turns off its abilities because it's like, I want to actually fight. Like, I'm too advanced. Like, I think by like 2022, they're like, no, we need, like, they, like, it's not fun, right? Like, it's just like, it'd be like LeBron going down to the, like, local pickup games and just like
dunking,
blocking
on
every
kids.
Shot and dunking. It's yes. Just like, yeah, you win. Like, we get it.
On the flip side, I do love the videos of, now that you brought that up, of when like somebody that runs or like works at a daycare just like just swats every kid shooting at the basket. So in that sense, Mark, I think maybe I would get enjoyment of just like playing way out of my league, but it would get boring.
Is
but
it
like
Rushmore
one time,
where Bill Murray just brutally just swats,
levels a kid from a shot? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a beautiful moment. But
just like walking by, just a kid playing basketball and just knocks him over.
Are these predators that tough?
Ooh.
Because in AVP, one xenomorph takes out three of them. But
well,
that xenomorph,
the xenomorph is like
is a badass
designed grid. To be the most perfect killing. You know what I mean? Like, that's mm-hmm. like a biologically advanced. I think that these ones are getting shuttled off. I don't know. Also, like, you think like it's getting dumped into the forest. Like, he just happens to run into, or the jungle, he just happens to run into like the baddest of the badass guys, right? Like, if they weren't there on this mission, there'd be even less for him to do.
He's like killing women and children. It'd be terrible.
Yeah, I don't know. What kind of predators are your favorite? Do you like the jungle hunter predator? Do you like city hunter?
I've never seen Predator 2.
Oh man, it's like one of the most nihilistic, violent. So Danny Glover plays a character, and like there's a chart on him, and he's 70% more aggressive than any other LA cop.
Okay.
And like,
it's just, and we know historically they're pretty aggressive.
It's wonderful. But then, and then in AVP, they're super beefy aliens. And then in AVP, there's this really cool AVPR Requiem. There's a one called Wolf that fights alien predator hybrid. In Predators, you have the like the there's two Yautja. There's two different clans, and they're
okay.
battling. So in Predators, we learn that there's like the bigger ones, like the berserkers, and then there's the littler ones, and they fight. And then in the Predator, you have a fugitive predator, but then you have like an Uber predator who is like Uber Jason.
Ah.
It's like they evolve over the years. But I think this one's probably my
Jungle Predator is pretty cool. Like,
yeah.
That's like where I'd want to fight like if I was a commando group, if you're going the other way, you're Arnold and you're like the most badass like rescue team, not all because they're not assassins, he tells us that, but if you're the most badass rescue team and you want to fight like fight something that truly is capable of hunting you, then I would want to fight Predator in the jungle.
I do like, you know, Friday the 13th took 8 movies to get Jason to the city, right? Like Predator 2 is like we're going there now, number 2.
Yeah, we're here.
Well, I will say, so speaking of Predator 2, so I was saying to Joe this morning, I was like, I'm being a little bit of a brat, but I can't really describe how much of an ordeal it was to watch this movie.
Which, why?
I own the Blu-ray. It's on Hulu. So I put the Blu-ray in, and this is a thing that I had heard about for certain things like 4K. The 4K remaster of the original Terminator is bad for this reason. But so here you're looking at a picture. This is Carl Weathers. This is on the 4K disc, right? This
okay.
is the opening scene. This is what I saw on the Blu-ray. I was like, I can't watch this movie.
Okay, okay.
So fully smoothed out. There's no contour, no context. When they upscaled to Blu-ray, they just annihilated all detail.
He looks like shiny.
So this is how Arnold's supposed to look.
Yeah.
And here's how Arnold looks smoothed out. And there are so many of these where I'm just like, it looks like I was like 6 minutes in. I'm just like, I can't watch this. And then I put it on Hulu, and I don't know if it was my internet, which probably wasn't my internet. I don't know if it was Hulu, whatever, but like it kept like not showing 1080p. I'm like, I can't watch this. So I went out and I bought
a 4K
box set of the four movies. So now I own Predator 2. So I've never seen Predator 2. I saw Predators with my dad in theaters, and I saw The Predator alone in theaters, and I saw Prey on Hulu. But, like, yeah, I'm missing Predator 2, but now I own it, so I gotta watch it.
The Predator has way too much plot. Like, Predator 1, get to the chopper.
Yeah.
Predator 2, survive in the city. Predator 3, survive
on another planet.
Hunting.
Yep.
Yeah, like, we're sent here, we have to survive. The Predator, whoo!
I did not like The Predator, from what I remember.
Sterling K. Brown is funny in it, but like then there's one group, and then there's Thomas Jane, and then there's the crazies, and then there's Olivia Munn,
and then
there's
isn't the kid. There's the lady kid from Room? Chuck.
Yeah, the kid from Room's in it. The lady Chuck is in it.
Yeah,
like leading actor Boyd Holbrook, not wonderful supporting actor Boyd Holbrook. You have
speaking of Boyd, alien, it's not that movie, but alien. In Predator 3, Walton Goggins is in there as Boyd Crowder. So like
multi-goggy.
I don't know.
So is Mahershala Ali. And Adrian Brody.
Yeah, I gotta rewatch 2 and 3 at least. Like I might not watch rewatch 4, but like have you seen any of the sequels or prequel, like including Prey?
No, I haven't seen any of them. Nope.
Prey is so
good.
Goddamn,
it's good. Cool.
And like that going straight to Hulu instead of the theaters is like one of the biggest like streaming injustices. Like it's unbelievably good.
Okay. Cool.
I have the awesome 4K steelbook. My wife got me because she loves Prey.
Oh, I have. Hold on. Episode. 1 second. Let me show you.
That thing's sweet. I love Prey. Like, I'm a big fan of that show Legion. That's like one of my favorite shows ever.
Okay.
And Amber Midthunder is on that. So like, whenever anybody like, I'm watching Tokyo Vice. One of the ladies from Legion's on it. Like, whenever my Legion crew is in something, I'm like, Legion, Legion baby.
Yeah, I bought Legion. That steelbook too. But here, I haven't hung this up yet. Oh. But here is.
Oh.
Hey.
Nice little like watercolor Prey art, which I just love.
It's a great movie.
It's
a really good movie. I very much so enjoy that. But like, I just think because it went back to its roots. Like, Prey's just like,
yeah.
There's a berserker predator. Oh no, they call it the feral predator. And like, you got to survive. But then there's some fur trappers there. But there were fur trappers.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's and like also they went out to where they shot the Revenant to shoot Prey. This one they actually went out to the jungle.
Yeah, like it takes place in like the 1700s or 1800s. Like it takes place like indigenous people. Like she's
very cool. Okay, yeah. Okay.
And there's a Predator 2 Easter egg, which you should pay attention for if you watch them all. But it's, I don't know, I think what makes this movie work, and you know what's kind of crazy? I talked to my students about this, where, you know, like Mad Max Fury Road, it's like A to B to A.
Yep.
Like Terminator, run! You know, like it's, what's interesting about a lot of action movies is that, like, I feel like the best ones, you know, just looking at this list, I mean, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly has a lot of twists, right? But it's still about one thing, find the treasure, you know, like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. You know, Aliens, we get stuck here, Saving Private Ryan. Hey, let's go save Ryan. You know, Mad Max, like Unforgiven, like he's going to get revenge.
Let's
on
go
his
save
friend.
Ryan.
Yep. So it's, you know, Terminator, run. Like it's No Country for Old Men, Die Hard, dudes in a building. So I think the best action films like Predator work when you really keep it simple.
Yep.
And a lot of movies don't know how to do that, which is really weird, because if you keep things simple, like Top Gun Maverick, let's train for the mission.
Yep.
Let's go on the mission. Like it's easy. So it's, you know, Barbie, start in Barbie land, go to real world, go back to Barbie land. So like what you just keep it simple and you can focus on the characters. You can focus on everything. But a lot of movies don't do that. And so it's like simple isn't easy.
No.
Which blows my mind. You know, like There's what, four types of endings in movies. There's flat, round characters, blah, blah, blah. But like, hey, we got an awesome alien. We have a tough crew. They fight. And like, people mess that up. People mess that up. And that's like, I think, you know, working on set, I've worked on 150 sets, you know, and like spending all my time on film sets, I can see how people mess it up. But it's crazy when you look at the simplicity of some of these movies, and I'm not being reductive here, like, and they work. So it's just kind of crazy knowing that, like, simple isn't easy.
Is it ego? Like somebody writing or directing, it's like, you know what? I need to give this a moral or, like, something deep that they're trying to, like the audience, like, I need to put in some kind of story to this for the audience, and it doesn't need it? Is it, like, because to me, that's the only way I can imagine this happening, but if you've experienced it, like, what, like, where does this stem from? How is this happening?
One of the greatest pieces of advice I ever heard was, I was listening to the Virgin Suicides documentary, and I love Sofia Coppola. She's incredible. And her dad told her when she was making Virgin Suicides, like, have one word to sum up your movie. So every decision based around that is about that one word. And so that one word was loss. Mm-hmm. So the movie's drenched with loss, and it's drenched with, like, that core idea. She understood that movie at its core. I think the best directors think about their movies and they understand what their movie is at the core of, you know, like, they know the, like, they just know what their movie is, and they've thought deeply about it, and they understand what it needs to work. Like, look at Cameron, man. Like, Avatar's Pocahontas.
Yep.
You know, Avatar 2 is like, hey, we're back. You know, it's Titanic, the boat sinks. You know, like, term, like, Abyss, hey, we're going underwater. So it's like real, it's not that simple, but it's, he keeps it simple, really though. Simple. It's like when people watch the movies, they feel comfortable watching it, right? They're just like, I know what's happening, so I don't have to think about it. I can just enjoy the experience.
Yep.
But he thinks about that. And he, you know, I hate the term, but he has a strong female character. Like, he's like the one director that thought about that in the 80s, 90s. So it's you think. A lot of people don't think. And I think McTiernan was so good back in the day because he was a thinker. And he understood what the movie needed. And that's what makes the best movies.
Even them, like, constructing the different traps is, like, just well done to just, like, lead the audience, like, show, don't tell, and just be like, this is how this is going to, like, line up. And you're like, oh, I know how this is going to work. And it's a complex trap, but you still know exactly what's happening.
Yeah, because they showed you, you know, yeah. Like, it's very simple, but it's just good storytelling. This is what we need. And a lot of people don't think about that. Like, I had a student today who's going on a shoot tomorrow, and I asked her about 50 questions. She's like, I didn't think about that. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about that. Like, McTiernan's thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think separates the best movies from the non-best movies, is the thought.
I think the thing that both of you were saying also, like, what I was going to say, I think you need to just trust in, like, yourself and the movie. And, like, because I can't imagine the screenplay for this is very long. Because, like, there's not dialogue. You're just, like, the guy's, like, in the woods and he looks scared.
Looks in,
you know,
jungle.
What I mean? Like, I think at a certain point you need to, like, trust that, like, trust your vision, trust your actors, trust whatever, that, like, you're telling a story that, like, is going to have legs that people are going to invest in when they watch. And I think what Mark's saying about being simple, like, not overcomplicating things to the point where you know these characters. And even if you, like, don't like them because they're homophobic or whatever, like, their death still means something.
Yep. Yeah.
Or you might not like him because he spits, you know, dip on Carl Weathers' shoe.
Yeah, when he gets it, you don't really feel about it. But, like, when Mac gets it, like, you know, I love Bill Duke. And, like, when he gets it, you're like, oh, man, like, Carl Weathers, like, he learns. He's like, I messed up, man. I'm going to stay behind. He gets his arm blown off. Like, you're watching Apollo Creed just get obliterated. So it's just such a smart, but also too, like, the best movies know how to subvert certain trends. So Die Hard, you had Bruce Willis, right? In a tower being Bruce Willis, like, just being sassy in New York, in LA. But that worked because he was a scrappy dude. He wasn't a big, brawn, burly guy. I think Speed works because of the relationship between Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. Like, he's very sensitive in that movie. Point Break works because of the way Catherine Bigelow framed the two men and made them sensitive and made them, like, just, like, beautifully shot film by Catherine Bigelow. So I think the best action films are the ones that take a very common idea but somehow subvert it just enough to make it, like, Mad Max Fury Road, right? It's there and back again.
Yep.
Like, but they do enough to subvert it and play it differently. So you take a simple thing, but then you also go, what can we do differently here? And, yeah, I think that's what separates a lot of these movies from all the other action films that come out.
Well, so let's invert that thing on its head right now and ask our conversation question. We are asking every movie all lap long.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Mark, if you have to name one thing about this movie that is the most 80s thing, good or bad, doesn't matter, doesn't, whatever, what's the most 80s element of Predator in your eyes?
Okay, so it's either the gigantic bicep handshake or the guys in the helicopter and like the jokes. Because you think about every, I was just talking about this, every single 80s action film, R-rated action film, like Roadhouse, Commando, Die Hard, they all feature gratuitous nudity. Mm-hmm. This one doesn't have any nudity, so it actually subverts that trend. But you have the you know, the F-bomb. You have the like jokes like that. So it's quite bawdy. But I'm going to say the biceps because like they try to repeat that, but that's so 80s. Like if Dom, if Vin Diesel and Dwayne Johnson did that, you'd be like, that's soft. Like you look at those two biceps of Carl Weathers and Arnold and you're like, that's never happening again.
Well, yeah, because they steroids.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah, steroids. It's a different era. Steroids.
Oh, yeah, so like there it is, the roids. Like the, I mean, you know, like Stallone talks about his diets on some of these movies, and it's just like, how are you still around, man? Like, it's insane. So I would say the handshake, because there's a lot of bombastic. Like, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme in the 80s was just butt shots,
yes,
bicep shots, and splits. Like, the male form was very idealized in the 80s, I think. And so, and maybe it made a comeback with, like, the MCU and the shirtless scenes, but even more so in the 80s. So that's my pick.
Speaking of Stallone, there's one other trivia that I forgot to say, that this apparently maybe was originally a joke that like the only thing Rocky's not yet fought was E.T. They're like, well, what if he did fight an alien? Here we
That's
are.
Fun.
That's Joe, fun. Most 80s?
I picked a very simple thing this time, but I think something we can all agree on. Single blade disposable razors are so 80s. There's just something you don't see anymore. He has the razor, that blue one. That he breaks on his face. That's like, that's not a Gillette. That's not a Mach 5. There's one blade in there. There's no smoothing gel on the front. That's my most 80s pick of this movie.
In that scene, I was hoping, because I didn't remember, I sort of remembered him breaking on his face, but like, I was kind of hoping for like a Jaws, like, ain't got no spit, like Hooper down there just like so nervous that like it's something that like is just so, like he's just shaving himself, like he's sweating, but like something bodily goes wrong, but just like he's so struck by fear that he like snap crazy. Love it.
And you know what's crazy, the final fight, you know, Arnold shirtless, right? It really does like celebrate the body of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh yeah,
but it's like, yeah, he has to get covered in mud, so it's like a brilliant way to just have your main rip character shirtless.
It is. It's a good excuse. You're right.
And like he's not, and the Predator's so much bigger than him. So it's really odd. Like normally this movie you feel like would be drenched in like, you know, like ego. And there doesn't feel like there's much ego here because they all get destroyed and Arnold gets beat up. So that's why, like, that's my problem when people are like, oh, this movie has a couple lines and has a couple this. And yes, it does date it. And I'm not saying that's right. It was the era, but the era was insane. Anybody who's like, you know, back in the 80s when is where it was, you're like, no, it wasn't where it was, fellas. You know, just because you had a good time because you're a dude.
Yeah.
You know, like, but I don't know. I think it's being reductive. I think this movie, but that's what's good about it, right? Like Verhoeven movies can be watched with your lizard brain, but also you can watch it as a film snob.
Mm-hmm.
I think this movie, you can do that too. I really do. And I don't think a lot of people do. That's because it's so good. You can just watch and be like, yes, guns, shooting bullets into the forest.
is Arnold the coolest looking man ever carrying a huge gun? It just like, it feels so natural. Like you see him just holding this huge ass gun shirtless and you're just like, yep, these two things were made for each other. Like,
I think so. Dwayne Johnson's right? Too big.
Yeah.
John Cena, I would probably start crying. Vin Diesel, no.
No, it's like, but Arnold has like the look on his face, like he's from another time period.
Chuck Norris looked good though with the big gun.
Okay, yeah, Chuck Norris is great. I agree, but I think like Arnold is like hard to like. I can't see anybody that looks better than him just holding a massive fucking gun with the biceps.
He's not holding it, but I will say in The Matrix when Neo rescues Morpheus from Agent Smith and he's got that minigun on the helicopter and he's there like in his like skin tight black long sleeve shirt, like that looks pretty good. But he's not holding the gun. It's a different thing, but like him with a big ass gun, but it's not the same. But it's the minigun's also largely gone away. We don't see
that.
A
might
lot
be
of
your. Is that your most '80s pick?
No, Mini my most gun? '80s pick. I went a little bit meta with two things.
Okay.
Number one, we are in the Reagan era, and so the fact that there are two actors who become governors in this movie.
Oh God,
feels pretty '80s to me.
With, good pick.
With both Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura being like, maybe I could do that.
That's very true.
But yeah. The thing that I think might, you know, the more in the movie pick is the character cards at the end, including Arnold ending on a freeze frame, just feels like that's, I mean, they still do that sometimes, but that's like, that's the 80s.
Good picks. Good picks all around. That was a good round.
I also loved, not an 80s thing, but like, I don't remember, I've only seen this movie maybe three or four times ever. But the translation of the line, the demon who makes trophies of man, is so cool. So badass. I love it.
Oh, man. Never mind. I was going to act who could be in this movie if this was shot now, but they already made The Predator and Predators. Like, you couldn't do this again, could you?
Gotta be The Rock.
They made The Expendables, no. Right? Like, they're trying to do these kind of things. You know what I mean? Like, they're what have we got? All of our greatest action heroes.
Is The Rock tough on screen?
I think he was. I don't think he is anymore. I think we know too much about him.
Yeah. I think that if they were recasting Predator today, though, The Rock has to be at the top of the list of Arnold characters.
I don't know. I think there is
size
an entire universe of Mark's guys, like the Frank Grillos of the world, who like wouldn't necessarily sell a movie, but like belong in the movie.
Oh, you could put a Grillo in here.
Mm-hmm.
You could do Grillo, Deb Patel.
Oh, Monkey Man. Monkey Man?
Ryan Gosling.
Goss in this? I like that. I like that.
Not Superman guy, Witcher guy. Not him.
Henry Cavill?
Yeah, not him.
He's a little handsome.
Man. What about Henry Golding? I love him in The Gentlemen. McConaughey.
McConaughey's a sleeper pick for this
Rain
movie.
Rain of Fire, McConaughey.
So here's, Google says, today's strongest actors. It's almost entirely Marvel and Fast and Furious. We got Chris Hemsworth.
Mm-mm.
Big biceps,
yeah,
though.
Pretty.
The Rock, Statham. Mm-mm. Hugh Jackman doesn't feel right.
Mm-mm. Statham could play like the Jesse Ventura character, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mark Wahlberg, Arnold, McConaughey, Johnny Depp. But the picture of Johnny Depp is Jake Gyllenhaal. Okay.
No Gyllenhaal.
Oh, no. You know who should be in it? The guy who played, I can't pronounce his name because I think it's Nordic, but the guy who played the Mountain in Game of Thrones.
Oh, that's a good pick. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, he can't lead a movie.
He could be Predator in the suit.
There's Zac Efron. But next is, hold on, I gotta share my screen again. This is, Google is having a moment right now. Because, like, I just searched today's strongest actors. Johnny Depp, that's Jake Gyllenhaal. Will Smith, ? Zac Efron, but that's Charlize Theron. I don't understand. Not, that's
Tom
not Tom Cruise.
Is Liam Neeson. Yeah. I don't know, man.
Like, I think Michael Jai White could have been, Mike Coulter. He was awesome in Plane. You guys know Mike Coulter? I think he could do it.
Yeah.
I know it's a random question, but I just, because this is such a specific kind
Momoa?
Of cast.
Momoa could do it.
You can't act tough. Like, I think Momoa has to act tough.
Yeah, I could see that.
Am I crazy?
No. He has a gentle spirit in him. He's like, he's playing crazy.
That's like the best thing I've heard in a long time. He has a gentle spirit.
You can see it, right?
That's like a great point.
I mean, like, he is or was in a relationship with Zoe Kravitz. I think like you don't land someone, you know, like you have to duality. I'm on mensjournal.com. This is 25 ripped celebrity dudes who own the Instagram workout game. top five so far have all been in Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah,
six,
there we
go. Cannibal. Sorry, they're, you know, combo breaker. Oh, you know who would be cast? And I'd be like, oh, God damn, would be Chris Pratt. They'd be like, oh,
yes.
No. New Predator movie was starring Chris Pratt. Like, no, man.
The thing people have to realize about Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger is their charm. Like, they are magnetic, but they don't act cool and they don't act tough. Like, in this movie, Carl Weathers isn't acting tough. In this movie, Arnold isn't acting tough. In this movie, Bill Duke. I think the toughest acting guy is Jesse Ventura because he's like the most braggadocious of all of them. But like Sonny. Sonny's you're like, this dude's Sonny, the actor, he's like, he's not acting tough. Like, he had to have a bodyguard on set to make sure he didn't beat up other people. These guys weren't acting. There was no swagger to any of them because they just were.
They're just 80s tough dudes.
Yeah. This man's man. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, quote, unquote, yeah, yeah. They are of the time that they're like, they're not. Yeah. Like, some of them might not even realize they're actors. Like, they're just like tough ass dudes.
You
right?
know who you could cast? Just do the entire Magic Mike XXL dudes. Manganiello,
Joe Manganiello is a good pick for this movie. He's all those
dudes
because
like, that's
yes.
that's a diverse array of like different types of like hunky dude, but they're all muscly, they're all fit, they all like, you know.
Mm.
But Channing, which yeah, like Channing also, you know, belongs in the conversation.
I like dude. Henry. I would put Henry Golding in here after watching him in The Gentlemen. Because like Guy Ritchie, Henry Golding, I love.
Now here's a question. Any of these actors that we said, could they do the Arnold primal yell?
No. Because Gosling would go, ay!
I think Momoa is the closest we'll get. And The Rock, just from the Samoan heritage.
He would do the haka into the woods.
Yes,
into the jungle.
Like that. Oh, you would man. Get that. And it would be as close as we would get.
Who's cinema's best yeller right now?
I mean, Gosling's up there, but it's not this kind of yelling.
He's a screamer.
Yeah.
A guttural yell.
Oh, man. Who could do a guttural yell? Liam Neeson's would sound too good. It would be like, is that a lion? Like, is that...
You know, we could just go to his counterpart detective. Russell Crowe probably has a good yell.
Oh, are you not entertained? Oh, you know who leads the movie? Jaimin Hunsu. He's huge.
Jaimin Hunsu. An inevitable in the running for Predator lead of the movie. Also great yeller.
Jaimin Hunsu. Yeah, he's a great yeller. You know what, though? I think Jaimin Hunsu yells a lot in his movies.
Hmm.
I'm going Jaimin Hunsu.
Okay.
Did you see him in Zack Snyder's slow motion or Utopia?
No.
Rebel Moon?
I did.
He's huge.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have to act tough. Have you ever watched that movie Never Back Down? It's an MMA Florida movie with Cam Gigante as a bad MMA villain.
No.
And Jaimin Hunsu is the MMA coach.
That sounds very fun, Florida. Though.
I had flashbacks watching it. It's like one of the most popular episodes we've ever had on Movies, Films, and Flicks for some reason. Maybe the MMA community listens to it. But the guy I recorded with, he does jiu-jitsu, and I used to roll. So like, I guess we, and I'm from Florida, so I guess we're able to talk about it with some authenticity.
You broke someone's arm in an arm wrestling match. I think so.
Either of you have any more thoughts about Predator before we watch the trailer?
I love it more. I really do. Mm. Of course, I cringe. But like, if you took out four lines, that's what's stupid. Like,
it still holds up. It does. If you take out four lines, the movie is like, it could play today and you'd be like, this is a sick-ass movie.
It's like, yeah, because there's so odd. You know what's crazy about great movies is when there's something that's just off. You feel it. Like, if you just watch a shit movie, you're like, oh, yeah, that's all crap. It's cool. It's fine. I loved it. But, like, if something's great and there's a couple off moments, you're like, you feel it so
yeah,
much
more. It's jarring. Yeah.
Like, it's like a perfect art, but then there's like a hole in it. You're like, what?
You were so close.
Yeah. And you just, you feel, you're like, no. So it's, yeah, it's still, I think people should study how this was made. They should study, you know, what works. And like, you know, the gun scene, McTiernan's like, I just want one really big gun scene so we can show it in the trailers. So then everyone's just like, and like, they do, they have the biggest gun scene ever. And like, just, it's glorious. And like, you put that on a trailer, dudes are like, I'm there. Like, I'm going to go see Red Dawn. Then we'll go see that. Wolverines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sold.
Yeah. Joe?
Yeah, that's it.
No, I'm glad we rewatched this. I haven't seen this movie in a very long time. So, and it just, again, Arnold is another one of these guys that like, for me, like the more pressing and pertinent Arnolds in my brain are like Kindergarten Cop and like these kind of things. So to see him like in his actual glory again, it's just such an awesome feeling. And I was just really enjoying Arnold as I was watching this movie.
I watched this movie most recently last Memorial Day after my barbecue when I was lying on the couch and I was just like, I don't want to do anything. I need to clean my house. I don't want to clean my house. And I just like opened up Max and like either this or Total Recall was there and I watched it. And then when one of those ended, it's like,
played the other
one. Would you like to watch the other one? I'm like,
yes.
And like I like half watched, half slept, just fully rested, but just like back to back, pretty good.
Pretty awesome.
Total Recall is another one you can watch with your lizard brain, but you can also watch with your cinephile brain.
It's the Verhoeven thing.
Yeah.
Have you seen L?
Yeah, I love L.
L's great.
Yeah, and Benedetta. I love Benedetta, too.
Benedetta.
Have you seen Benedetta?
Yeah. Joe, Benedetta's about naughty nuns.
It lays like it lays the farting gauntlet down and pooping gauntlet down in like the first 5 minutes. And I love it.
Oh.
L is really good, though. Isabelle Huppert. Oof. All right.
Should have won the Oscar.
Let's watch the trailer posted by our favorites, Rotten Tomatoes Classic Trailers, Predator 1987 trailer number one, Movie Clips Classic Trailers, posted 5 years ago, 435,000 views. Top comment, back when movies used to be better than trailers. So maybe this is a bad trailer, or maybe it's just he's saying it's a good movie. I don't know. Or maybe just,
okay.
That could go in any number of directions.
Yeah, what do you mean by that? That was an interesting sentence. Okay.
Mark, let me know when you're ready to play it.
I'm good to go.
All right. 3, 2, 1, play. I wonder if we're going to get the In a World.
Don LaFontaine. I hope so. I hope so. That'd be pretty cool.
In a jungle.
I thought that was the trailer.
We are a rescue team, not assassins.
There is a couple things like that, like weird sort of jarring cut in the trailer. There's a couple things like they just like cut to, like he looks over at the wood to like trap the predator with that like log, and like it's just like a still image. I'm like, ooh, like you didn't have,
yes,
you didn't have coverage. Like there's a couple times where like the movie kind of fucks up, which is kind of endearing.
I think when he's like stabbing the warthog, there's like, I'm like, oh, that was a different camera.
Stick around an elite rescue squad. Oh,
there you go.
I got time to bleed.
And then Shane Black's like, oh, we need the best. Okay.
Now, what's got Billy so spooked? There's something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man. They're up against the ultimate enemy.
Holy mother of God.
Nothing like it has ever been on Earth before.
She says the jungle just came alive and took him.
We cannot see it.
No blood, no bodies. We hit nothing.
But it sees.
This feels too frenetic. And the heat of, I mean, like, I get that that's the point of a trailer, but, like,
and now it wants us.
It kills for
pleasure.
He was skinned alive.
It hunts.
I can't believe how much they're showing the,
yeah,
the mirrored predator.
Oh,
in
that's
the
also why I thought, like, Jaws, because you don't see Jaws very much, and for most of this movie, you don't really see the predator. Right? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, it's,
yes,
it's the unseen terror that's scarier than seeing it.
Arnold Schwarzenegger. Predator. The hunt begins Friday, June 12th at theaters everywhere.
Oh.
That voiceover guy sounds more like a horror guy than like the action guy. You know what I mean? Like
I agree. I absolutely agree.
Like the,
can we have a quick 3-minute conversation about something?
Thanks.
What?
Jaws, Alien, Predator. They would have shown the shark more in Jaws.
Yep.
Alien. They would have shown the alien more in Alien.
Yep.
Predator. They would have shown the Predator more. If it worked. Mm-hmm. So I feel like people learn the wrong lesson.
Yeah.
So I did a study for Rotten Tomatoes years ago where it's like, if you show the alien more, actually movies do have a higher tomato meter score. It's like a lot of movies are like, well, yeah, you just don't show the monster. But if you have a monster, you show it.
Yeah.
But the problem is these movies couldn't really show their monsters. So it's like, sometimes it's like, yeah, less is more. But like, no, they wanted to show more. Like it just turned out that they couldn't and they were good directors. So they made it work.
I mean, look, if I've learned one thing about Hollywood, it's that they always learn the wrong lessons. We've talked
yes.
about this before. Oh, Barbie made $1 billion. We need more movies about toys. It's like, no, you don't.
Yeah, the Strawberry Shortcake gets a movie now, and you're like, no, that's not what we wanted.
You need more movies like Barbie, not more movies like that. But it's, I just find it interesting where, like, yeah, the shark didn't work, but, like, Jaws is great because it's all about the characters. Yeah, because the shark wasn't working. And so they were just writing every night to, like, find something to do.
Part of me, I mean, like, I'm sure that this is not an original thought, but, like, I want to see, like, what Jaws is, like, if they show the shark as much. Like, we probably wouldn't like it because we're used to Jaws, but, like, maybe be really good. But I don't know.
It's like it was all accidents, right? They're like
happy accidents.
They were looking at the xenomorph and they're like, listen, Geiger made this thing look like a penis. We can't show too much of it. Like it's it's like this thing, he can't move. It's like we just can't show much because it would not be scary anymore. Mm-hmm. So but people are like, yeah, just don't show your monster. It's like, no. If it's awesome looking, show it. Like
the whole time. Like the entire
thing. Yeah. Like Bong Joon-ho was like, listen, y'all, this monster's awesome. And we're gonna have a daytime attack at the beginning of the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, we have a lot of monster in this movie, and it's great. So it's just, it's like, I get it, but also y'all, like, there's a reason they wanted to show their monsters more, but they couldn't. So just, I think that's something that I always find interesting when people are like, yeah, less is more. And I'm like, no, it's not. Like, they would have had more.
Yeah.
They just couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's not, I don't know, I just had to get that out there.
No, I appreciate it. Letterbox game, for reference sake, Mad Max Fury Road, 1.8 million times logged. Predator from 1987, directed by John McTiernan, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, Carl Weathers, and Elpidia Carrillo. Has been seen by how many people?
I have a guess.
Go ahead, please, start us off.
837,000.
Okay.
That's a good guess. I'm going to go 675,000.
Another good guess. Surprisingly, they're both too high.
34,000
people. 34 people.
Okay, no, I go.
I will say you're too low.
537.
You're very close. 495,000, which is a solid number, but still.
That's an insane number, but it's an older movie. Even though it has Arnold, that's a lot of people still for an older movie.
Average Parasite of a 3.8, most common a 4, then a 3.5, then a 3, then a 5. How many of those 495,000 people have this movie in their top four favorite films of all time?
A lot. It got to be a buttload. Is it over 1,000?
Yes.
I'm going to say 17,000.
17,000?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a little bit lower than that. I would say, I'm going to take yours, but I'm going to do 1,700. I'll piggyback off Mark.
Between those numbers, one more guess each. Between 1,700 and 17,000.
2,200.
By that point, they don't even do the numbers. It's just like in the hundreds. So you're saying 2,200?
That's what I said, 2,200. Yeah, that's what I was.
9,360.
2,700 people have this in their top four favorite films.
Insane number. Excellent number.
We are going to go to Aaron H23, who has logged this movie 8 times. Every single time, he just has rating A. He also sometimes says, top 5 action sci-fi movie of all time. Also sometimes says, obviously. But over and over again, just...
He just loves Predator, rating. Man. Awesome, good for him.
Aaron's number one favorite film of all time is Predator. Numbers 2, 3, and 4...
Aliens.
No, but 2 came out in the 70s and 1 came out in the 50s. And I would say if you asked... like 50 people what their favorite movie of all time is, you would, all three of these would be named. One of them, the one from the 50s is a little bit more obscure, but we'll get to that in a second. But like one is like the greatest crime movie of all time, and one is the greatest horror movie of all time, both in the 70s.
Godfather.
Uh-huh. And can you go 2 for 2?
Texas Chainsaw?
Mm-mm.
Jaws?
Mm-mm.
Exorcist?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, Joey. Joe, too.
No, please. No. I appreciate all the help I can get. Thank Predator, you. I love playing this game with a friend.
Godfather and Exorcist. Now, here, number 4 is another one that is widely considered one of the best movies of all time. Aaron's
from the
review.
50s.
Aaron's review just says rating A.
From the 50s?
Yeah, from the
50s. I will say...
North by Northwest.
This is not going to help. No. That's a good guess, though. I listened to a podcast called Bananas for Bonanza, where comedians Andy Daly and Matt Gourley, as characters, watch every episode of Bonanza and talk about it. And each time they review an episode, they talk about the what's going on in society at the time. And the number one movie at the box office, while Bonanza was going for more than a year, was this movie. Like, this movie was number one in the box office. It's like the only movie people were seeing. And then another movie like took over number one. And then this movie reclaimed number one. But this movie was in theaters for more than a year at number one from the 50s.
Sound of Music?
Mm-mm.
I was going to guess Sound of Music. I really was just going to guess Sound of Music.
Ben-Hur? Ben-Hur.
There you go. Fuck.
Yeah.
3.5 hours. Like, it's kind of like, you know, people are like, yeah, if I'm to pay money to go see a movie, I'm just get a 3.5 hour long movie.
Well, that's what they were doing because TV was coming out. So, like, we need spectacles.
Yep.
Yeah.
But Aaron's top four, Predator, Godfather, Exorcist, Ben-Hur. It's like, can't argue with it.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid top four. It is.
Now, before we say goodbye, before I thank our patrons, before we talk about the next episodes, Mark, you just had something published you did a lot of research on that
Tell us about it.
And dear to the heart of this podcast. What's out there?
No, I just want to let you know, I'm not a fan of the title or the thumbnails, but I got hired to figure out all the CO2 emissions of the Fast and Furious franchise. And the thing is, like, Matt Pat's a fan of the movies, so like, but I think the thumbnail is called Too Fast, Too Stupid.
And like, it's my dumbest theory ever.
And like, you know, it's kind of funny. I've been pitching stupid theories to Film Theory forever. So like, I'm glad that they finally went. Like, they tasked me with apparently his dumbest one. I came up with much dumber. But yeah, so I figured out the CO2 emissions of all the Fast and Furious movies. Heroes. And
I watched it today. It was a great video, and it was clearly influenced by your research deeply.
You can feel the mark throughout all of it.
Palpable through it. Yeah.
As the video is building up to like the number one, you know, offender, I'm like, yeah, obviously it's Cypher. And then like to confirm it's Cypher, like just like flying that mobile helicopter and the headquarters. The
mobile plane. Yeah, the plane.
Like the big ass plane just around for days on end. It's like, yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, so I researched, wrote, and then of course they had some edits because it's one of MatPat's. But it's cool. MatPat has like over a billion views on YouTube.
Is he ending his show or something?
Well, he's stepping away, so all of his shows are going to continue, but with the creative team. But like, he's legendary on YouTube. Like, he's like one of the guys who helped make it big. So for me to be able to write one of his final episodes was an honor. It's not too fast, too stupid because he likes the franchise, and I also wrote another video for him too about Fast and Furious. So. But yeah, it was cool. But I spent like, I analyzed every car. I looked up all the distance and, oh, that's a G7. And, oh, what kind of Learjet is that? And, oh, it's a 787. And how much gasoline? How many miles? And how many grams? And how many metric tons? And like,
it was crazy how much more offensive in terms of the like CO2 emissions the first movie was than like almost any other movie.
Yeah, I mean, look at Race Wars, right? There's like 800 cars racing, and then you have everyone showed up for Dom's race as well. Like, everyone shows up. So I counted all the cars on that, and I gave him a full tank of gas, and I counted that. So he has a lot more gas in that one.
I was actually really shocked when they were like, there's only 4 flights in the first 4 movies, and then 75 afterwards. It's crazy. I was like, that sounds so right and so crazy to my brain at the same time.
You know, I just finally figured out that, like, too fast, they have to go fly to get Roman.
Yes.
Like, that's a flight.
That is a flight, yeah.
And then Tokyo Drift, he takes a flight. And then I'm assuming Vin, he's at the Dominican Republic, so he has to take a flight or a boat, right?
Yeah.
And then Letty probably flies back to the States.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are my 4 flights that I came up
also,
with.
Also, good job including the turbocharged prelude, obviously.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But Etienne flying their entire military to Samoa, it's just like, yeah, that was not good for the environment. Like, that was almost bad.
Probably a bad choice, yeah.
Yeah, it's like United Kingdom, and like, wait, they took an army to Samoa? Like, how many miles is that?
But, Joe, you know my favorite part of the video?
What was your favorite part of the video, Joey?
And all of a sudden, talking about Taylor Swift. Like, people complaining about Taylor Swift's jet? Just wait a minute. Let's talk about Cypher.
Yeah.
Yes, we did get a little Taylor Swift shot season there. I like that.
Everyone does. It's annoying. It's like keywords, right? And just like, you put Taylor Swift.
Like,
in there,
I don't like the whole jet thing. Like,
no, but the whole like the meme of Taylor Swift's carbon emissions. Have you guys seen all?
I'm gonna go get some coffee.
They were incredible. Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah, those ones like flying a jet. Yeah. Yes,
but it's cool though. Like, I spent a lot of time researching it. But I mean, there's worse things in life to get paid to watch
for sure.
And like after this, we're done. I got to go research the MonsterVerse movies for an assignment.
Ooh.
And then I got another one coming up.
You got so many cool things in so many weird places. I love it.
Yeah.
I love
it. No, it's neat. So yeah, I just, you know, I got it today and it's due tomorrow. So that'll be interesting.
What else you got going on, either your podcast or other things that have come out, either your writing or your videos or your research? What else can people find about you? I mean, you're everywhere, but like.
I have an Oscar video coming out for Fandom soon.
Nice.
So women in the best director category. I just released this best Spider-Man villain episode for Fandom, that film theory video. And then Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, we were just number 8 in the U.S. So that
congratulations.
Was
congratulations.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
MFF is rolling. Deep Blue Sea is rolling. You know, like just, yeah, staying busy. I'm just one day at a time, guys. It's like I'll think about it tomorrow.
Quarter mile at a time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But no, it's good. Like, you know, like staying busy is better than not. So
yeah.
Amen. Amen.
Well, once again, shout out to Josh and Michael for sponsoring this lap and for picking this movie. And also shout out to Cassie Wilson, Nick Burris, Alex Ellen, and Justin Kleiman, Brian Rodriguez of High School Slumber Ooh. Party, Wes Hampton, Jerry Robinson, Dan the Duke, Hayden, Renato DiDonato, Michael McGann, Lane Middleton, Lindsay Lewandowski, Nate Milton of the Kings of Sport, Jason Rainey, Tom Price, Mike Gallier, skipping the names I've already said, Christian Larson, Tara Newland, Aaron Willows, and Natalie Absolute, Randy Carter, Josh Goularm, and Jessica Collins, a.k.a.
Montez.
Thank you all for supporting us at the $5 a month level or above. You patrons and everyone, even the dollar a month people, get a bonus episode about Zardoz in a couple of days.
Have you ever seen this movie, Mark?
I just know the red thing. I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. See it. Watch it.
All right.
It's worth the time. And then ask Joey the cool stats that he figured out about the movie.
So Zardoz in a couple of days. The next week, everyone's next main feed episode will be Our Life in the Fast Lane, number 24. We got a lot of news to talk about.
Okay.
Very exciting stuff. Very big things going on in the franchise, but that's next week. But for all things Too Fast, Too Forever, go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/TooFastTooForever, or @TooFastTooForever on all the platforms. Email us, family@cageclub.me. We'll read it next episode. Check out our Patreon page at TooFastTooForever.com and our store at cageclub.me/shop. And come back next week for Life in the Fast Lane, or if you're a patron, for Zardoz, which is the final bonus episode this last lap.
Last lap.
I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe too.
And that was the shark man himself in the jungle, Mark Hoffmeyer. And we will tell you all about it
when we see you again.